You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of March 16th, 2022, and after 10 years, we're back in the desert.
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Obler.
My name is Scott Juster.
This is a serious but unhumorous conversation about video games, and it's an oldie but a goodie, you know?
Can't say that enough.
So about 10 years ago, almost exactly to the date, that game company released Journey, which you and I have talked about countless times on the podcast, one of our favorite games of all time. And every single year, pretty much without fail, although this year, you know, give or take a day, depending. We replay Journey on its anniversary and sort of revisit that experience. You, I think, came up with a good idea that marking the 10th anniversary is a great time to revisit the game, our experience with it, and just how it's changed over the years as we play through it each year. Because, you know, I wrote about this, I think, in like 2014, so the game was only a couple years old, about the experience of playing Journey as a ritual, like what it sort of means to sort of participate in that ritual yearly. And it's fascinating, and I think I find something new every year, so that's going to be this week's conversation.
I mean, it's a rare retrospective debrief combo, and I guess we should just say, like, you should most certainly play this game. It's on PC and iOS and Sony platforms now, and we'll obviously be spoiling it, but it is a 2-hour game and it's one of the greats, so I don't know if anyone, it's highly dubious that anyone listening to this hasn't played it, but if you haven't, it's extremely worth your time.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the benefits of doing a podcast for as long as we have is that we have a debrief of Journey on the site, correct?
That is one of the benefits, along with the millions of dollars we make.
That big podcast money.
I haven't listened to it yet. I don't know if I will, because it will probably be too cringy for me to hear my opinions from 10 years ago. But
I mean, I think we liked it, so I feel like we're not going to be way off. You know,
I guess that's true. I guess that's true. But yes, I mean, it is fun. It is fun to read and listen to some of those old things because we've just been playing this game for so long, I was playing it, and Hana was like, wait, you know, you're playing this game? And I was like, yeah, we play it every year. And she's like, every year? It's like, yeah, it's like reading a book. It's like every time we play it, we get something new out of it. And it's, and to your point and your post, it's just this kind of springtime ritual that we have now. And we just think about something different every time we play it.
It's such a great experience to revisit, because the game itself is about reliving an experience, you know, like it opens with the sort of star crashing into the sand, and you sort of restart your journey, and you see it, like, I think in this year when I played it, I noticed it a couple times more profoundly, the sort of star zooming past you. And, you know, it's interesting playing it so many years later, because each time I'm playing it and I see that star, or, and maybe this was my particular experience this year for whatever reason, but it felt a lot more like, you know, there's that this beautiful scene in the right about in the midpoint of the game when you reach the top of the tower and one of those sort of white cloaked figures shows up and shows you what you've been through and then shows you what's to come. And I remember when I first played that, it was this triumphant moment, right? Of like, I did all of these things. I did them with, you know, another compatriot, and we still have yet more to go. And so much of my thought was about, you know, what I had just experienced and what I knew was going to come. And this year, when I was watching that scene, I wasn't thinking about the experiences I just did, but I was thinking about the different experiences I've had with Journey over the past decade, right? Like those little red figures in the tapestry in that scene, to me, were evocative of like the different moments in my life that I had been in during each of these. And maybe for me, it was pointed this year because, you know, I think last year we played, I had not yet had a baby, but was expecting one, right? Which, of course, is you're going to have a totally different frame of mind. And now I've had one, and, you know, it feels like I'm at the point in my life where, like, you know, I've had a lot of experience. I feel like I've lived a life at this point, you know, or a large chunk of a life at the very least.
Yeah.
And it lends itself well to thinking about like those steps that you've already taken, you know, the different versions of you that you've been over the years.
Yeah. I mean, that hit me too this year for sure. And not only just the tapestry, and I mean, it's just so much of the game just kind of strikes me as so elegant, but the kind of quasi-looping nature of the game where you realize that not only have you been writing a history, but you're also taking part in a history that's already been written. And like that point is just so profound that I feel like I didn't even really appreciate it as much at that time, where it's like, oh, like this isn't, this also is a game about something. It's not a game about something that happens. It's about a game. It's a game about something that has already happened and will continue to be recorded. And that stuff just hit me very hard. And all of the different glyphs, like in the sky on those tapestries, where you realize, oh, those are like the souls or the reincarnations of all of the other journeyers or whatever. It's I don't know. That theme hit me a lot this year too.
Even the tombstones that you see dotted throughout the game, right? Yeah, I remember the first time I played it, I was like, oh, this is kind of sad. And you know, you think, oh, this is where another player has fallen, versus like these kind of mark the passage of people that have come before me experiencing this journey, right?
Yeah.
I also for the first time kind of noticed there's the scene when you are in the sort of dark tunnels and you flee the flying machine things and you land in like a protective barrier.
Yeah.
And all along the floor and along the sort of translucent wall of that, there's that protective barrier, you see all the runes.
Yeah.
And for the first time I was like, oh, a lot of these runes probably match the runes that each character has, right? Yeah. So it felt like a moment that was honoring the sort of collective accomplishment or the connection between players in a way that, I don't know, this year resonated with me differently.
Yeah. I was thinking also about our recent addition to the Gamies, the George Orwell Award for
elegance.
Excellence and elegance. And just this game is so elegant. I mean, they stripped away so much in this game. You know, you can jump and you can do your ping and that's it. But so much of it is evocative, and just the little things around, you know, Hana was like, oh, remind me, you can fly in this game, right? I was like, well, kind of. You have to recharge your flight through, you know, the power of the scarfs, or you can recharge it by being close to another player. And it's like, man, like what an elegant way of communicating the theme of companionship. Yeah. You know, like the power juice in this game is obtained by being close to another person.
Yeah. You
know, like, man, what a fucking metaphor. Like, it's just so elegant and so stripped down. Extremely impressive.
This year when I play, so last year I think was when I had the PS5 and maybe I had deleted my save file or something, but I didn't have all of the, I didn't have the ability to be one of the white
characters,
the white robed, rather than the red one, right? This year I played as the white-robed one, and it's also so interesting to me the way that little shift changes how you perceive things, right? Because you sort of recognize yourself as someone that's already accomplished this, you know? You have the experience doing it, and so even as you're thinking about, in those cutscenes, what your character has done or the progress or how you're fitting into that story, it's hard not to think about the person you are having been built from the experiences that you have already rather than someone experiencing it for the first time or, you know, exploring what the metaphors are for your particular journey, right? It becomes bigger. The other thing I thought that was interesting for me on this playthrough is I started thinking of it in a much smaller scale. You know, there have been the years where, you know, maybe like I lost someone in my life, for example, where when I'm replaying it, I'm thinking about the journey at the scale of an entire life, you know, and what this game might be saying about the way that we, you know, sometimes we struggle and we slip back and, you know, like that whole, the whole life journey versus in this one, I was almost thinking of it in a smaller scale, partially because I think having had a baby this past year, your individual trials and tribulations are like, there are high highs and low lows,
right,
and they span days, you know? Like, yeah. there can be days where it's like, oh, you know, Otzi's doing great and yeah. she's giggling and it's fun. And then, like, when she caught COVID this year, and it was really scary yeah. for like 3 days, right? Yeah. And that was awful and it was really hard. And then, you know, we got better and we got over it and it was great, right?
Yeah.
Or most recently, she had roseola, right? Which is like relatively minor, but, you know, I'm just traumatized now from like yeah, seeing her sick scary. From COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah, that it's like a scary thing, right?
Yeah.
And I started to think about the ways that this game could be. You could explore the journey as a metaphor for much smaller scale accomplishments or yeah. smaller scale journeys, right? Like, you can have these types of experiences and reflect on the changes that you can experience that can sometimes happen over like the span of a week,
yeah.
you know? Yeah. Which is just kind of an interesting way of rethinking about, I think, the central metaphor that we've revisited year after year.
Well, and I think there's something to be said for the repetitive nature of it, where especially like in from a parenting perspective, you know, so much of, especially it seems like, you know, early parenting is of constantly repeating cycle that ever so subtly drifts until you realize it's a totally different cycle.
Yeah.
You know, it's like in a weird way, every day feels the same until you realize that, holy shit, you can walk now. Yeah, you know, yeah, it's like, yeah. and it doesn't, you don't feel it changing, but you're in this like miniature, you are in this miniature journey, even day by day, just to kind of get through it. But then at the same time, there's this big meta story happening, you know, behind the scenes that is easy to miss, you know, when you're in it day after day and it feels repetitive.
Yeah, yeah. I like you positioning it also as, you know, a story that's been told before, right? Because yeah. even from that parenting perspective, right, which is so easy to think about when you're playing a game like Journey, being a new parent,
yeah.
or being a parent, any parent period, I guess, right, is like, you're not the first, right? Like, you, yeah. we, right. it goes back, you know, nigh thousands yeah. and thousands of years, right, of like parents, yeah. parents. And, you know, we think about our own parents and like the legacy we want to leave yeah. and what, you know, like even looking at those tombstones or the guideposts or the remnants and the stories of other people in this game, right? Because you can find the walls
mm-hmm.
that you yeah. can sort of reveal an aspect of the story, and you get it in bits and pieces. And,
yeah.
You know, it tells a, almost like a, it feels in many cases like a warning, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
don't do this, these things, because yeah. this is how it brought ruin upon our culture yeah. or civilization or what have you, right? There's an element of being able to play this game and just thinking about, well, you know, what are the moments that are going to be most important for expressing to your child as they get older, right?
Yeah.
And some you start expressing very early, right? Like just in purely in the way that you behave around your baby before yeah. you even have words. But, you know, at some point my kid is going to ask, like, well, what was your dad like? Mm-hmm. You know, what was your mom like when you were a kid?
Yeah.
You know, or like, what was your childhood like?
Yeah.
And my answers aren't going to be happy ones right. all the time, you know? And yeah. like, at some point you have to sort of talk about, or, you know, what was it like when you were younger? What was it like in college? You know what I mean? Like you mm-hmm. there are those moments in your life where maybe you've made mistakes or maybe you have regrets or,
yeah.
you know, maybe it took you a really long time to be confident in yourself, or it took yeah. you a really long time to figure out what was important in your life, or it took you a really long time to even just articulate some important aspect of yourself, right?
Yeah.
And these are all things that at some point we will need to or want to engage with our children on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, replaying Journey this year, I think it was also, there's no moment now, I think, where I will play Journey without thinking about what it means to be a parent.
Yeah. I mean, it just becomes part of your identity, you know, like you can't separate yeah. that stuff from it. And then you, and especially now, like in the kind of world that we live in and the decisions yeah. that we're making and, you know, what's going to be the legacy for people 10, 20, 30, 50 years down the line, you know, like it's highly relevant, you know, the story that they're telling.
Yeah. I recently read a book when this was a while ago. I think I was just feeling like really stressed. I don't know if I talked about it on the podcast yet or not, but I think I was like very stressed out. I still sort of have, you know, sinus medical issues or whatever.
Yeah.
And Otzi was really young. And so I bought this book about hope. It was a philosophy book. It's a philosophy professor talking about what hope means. And one of the things that struck with me was this idea that like hope isn't for you, right? Like you and I don't hope because we think that within our lifetimes we're going to solve climate change,
mm-hmm.
you know? But having children kind of forces you to hope for a future, maybe even not in, even for them, but towards this brighter thing. And I think when it was articulated in that way of like hope, who is hope for?
Yeah.
I think for me, it really made a lot of sense, and it glommed onto, you know, some of my thinking that existed already, right?
Right.
In terms of like long-term thinking, a large-scale thinking, which I think humans are really bad at, but it's very important to do. And what it means to sort of like, you know, because I know when I was young and I was, you know, even more politically active than I am today, a common question that we discussed was like, you know, how do you decide what you're going to work on? If you believe in animal rights, you got to commit your life to animal rights. If you believe in climate change, you got to commit your life to climate change. Like, how do you do all of these? How does it not overwhelm you and stress you out that the whole world is fucked in so many different ways, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I think the common fallback that I had, at least, was you have to pick the thing that is going to keep you working towards that future that you want.
Yeah.
And you have to have faith that others are doing the same in these other sectors, right? If you passionately believe that one of the only ways to get out of the climate change disaster that we have in front of us is better education for children, and you're committing your life to improving that and being active when you have time and the energy to be politically active, more power to you, right? Because someone else is doing that same thing for other important aspects of it. And it needs to be that alliance of things, right? And I mean, I'm going a bit off on a tangent here, but just to bring it back to Journey, right? Like, the game showcases what sort of befell this world.
Yeah, yeah.
Very early on, right? Yeah. Like, you get the sense that this was their sort of own undoing. Mm-hmm. And you kind of have to, I think it's really easy to ask yourself, you know, why are you going on the journey at all? Like, what is it about learning about these people, and what are you accomplishing in the end, right?
Yeah.
And I do think it is about having hope, reconnecting to others around you, you know, like when you are with another person and you're finding that comfort towards the bitter end as you climb up that last hill, right? Or when you finally go through the bright light at the end, knowing that, you know, this is a cyclical thing and you had this moment with this person and maybe you got something out of it, even if the backstory to this entire world is one that's dour.
Yeah.
I think there's a similar message there about like who hope is for and why you have it.
I was, I don't know if this was the book you were reading or not, but I was listening to an interview. Mark Maron was interviewing Jane Goodall. And she recently, along with another author, wrote a book about hope. It was called The Book of Hope. And it was
not that one, but I should read that one.
It was interesting. I mean, for me, it was interesting just because she seems really with it for being
Jane Goodall?
Her 90s. Yeah. Like, she was sharp. And she was talking about
The apes, dude. It's living with the apes.
I mean, I don't know what it is. Maybe she learned something from all of them. But like, the thing that was interesting to me was that she's not naive. You know, she was like, hope isn't about binding yourself to the realities of a bad situation. Like, hope is about how do you persevere and admitting that sometimes you're in a bad situation.
Sure.
And I thought a lot about that too, where like this, you know, Journey is not a triumphant story in the like romantic sense of like you fix the world at the end. You know, it's you have to have hope because you are facing this adversity, and maybe the hope is just that if you learn something here, you can act differently or you won't make the same mistake again. You know, it's like, you're not going to fix it, but you can, you know what to do to make things turn out better the next time. And, and it's just a really mature theme in any media. And even especially in video games, where generally speaking, the history of video games up until, you know, fairly recent memory has been largely saving the universe one video game at a time.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's like, you're not going to save the universe in Journey. That universe is gone. You know, the world is already gone. Like, that ship has sailed. And so now it's like, this is a meditation on what do we learn from that situation and what do you bring from it? Which it's a sad, but also kind of pragmatically hopeful journey, you know, not something that's Pollyannish or naive, which I appreciate. It's a mature telling of something like that.
For sure. I found the book, by the way, just to share if any listeners want to check it out. It's called Infinitely Full of Hope, Fatherhood and the Future in the Age of Crisis and Disaster.
Oh, there we go.
Very, yeah, very appropriate for that particular headspace I was in earlier, I guess this year. You know, the other thing that I think is interesting about it is, you know, there are religious undertones to Journey.
Yeah,
or rather,
yeah.
I think if you are familiar with religion at all, it's very...
Easy to read
into that, right?
Yeah.
But it's still a secular sort of vision of it, you know? Like, it's kind of, it leaves space for you, to, I think, to find and explore those thoughts that faith can bring up, right? When you're thinking about, you know, life and death or renewal or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. I think for me, like, you know, whatever, I'm not religious really at all. But as a kid, I was in a way, right? Like, we would go to... Catholic mass occasionally you know, Easter stuff and whatnot. And I found a lot of comfort in those spaces.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, I think, to replay Journey every year, especially the last few years, because with maybe like one exception, I've never encountered anybody else. It's been a completely solitary experience. Mm-hmm. And to me, it feels playing a game like Journey ritualistically every year and solo every year. It becomes a very sort of like inward philosophical thinking experience, you know? It's not even, and being so familiar with the game, right? Knowing where everything is, knowing how its systems work, and knowing what's to come, it becomes this experience that is a lot more akin to something like, I mean, this sounds like a stretch, but it's more akin to something like a prayer ritual or something that you might do in church, right? Because you know the lines, you know the words, right? Like, we've all been here before.
Yep.
It's the 10th, you know, we've played it more than 10 times, I'm sure, but this is the 10th year of playing it in this particular way.
Yep.
And it takes on, it's like, okay, well, this is the moment where every year I get to sit down and I get to think about stuff with this particular lens to help me think about it. And it's unique because there's very few games like that. You know, I have replayed and revisited games. I talked a couple weeks ago, can't wait to play God of War, right? But like, I don't think replaying those experiences in a non-ritualistic way, even if you're repeating it, is the same thing. And you know, I would bet that there's a lot of gamers out there that do revisit certain games so many times that it does become ritual. You know, there are people that play, I don't know, maybe Bloodborne is becoming that way in a weird way, you know, or Dark Souls, because I replay those games.
Yeah.
You know, I know some people replay JRPGs, like they replay Pokemon Red every year.
Yep.
Or they replay some classic game that they fell in love with, like, I don't know, you know, Advance Wars or whatever, right?
Yep.
Maybe for them it does become a ritual because they know it so well and they know it so intimately. And it's an opportunity to explore those ideas or those themes that the game provides in a way that, because it's a revisit, gives you this unique opportunity to explore something in a space that is as safe as one might find in a church, in a way.
Yeah, completely agreed. I mean, because you do fall into that. You know, whether it is, you know, organized religion, or whether it's just people who really know, you know, the Bible or whatever, or people who just like read Lord of the Rings every year or something. That's like, you because you know it so well, you're able to like much more easily investigate other parts of it without having to like, I don't mean this in a bad way, but you could put part of your brain on autopilot because you know the words so well, you know, because you know because I know the architecture and the environments of Journey so well, I can decide what I want to like really focus on and try to get out of it versus like trying to read it, so to speak, for the first time. And it does become a tradition, you know, it becomes a ritual that you can get something different out of every time because you practice it all the time, which I think is another thing that we often don't think about a lot. We're like, that sort of stuff. I mean, it's why they refer to the practice of religion. You're a practicing Jew or you're a practicing Catholic or whatever. It's like, you know, you are just constantly going through these motions in the same way. I'm a
practicing journeyer.
Yeah. I mean, it's just kind of funny to think about. That sort of stuff does give you a different angle on it pretty much every time you play.
Is there anything else that you revisit on a like yearly basis like this?
I mean, as silly as it sounds, probably the piece of media that I revisit most often, other than Journey, which is, I think, probably, I would say, by far the most regular revisiting I do out of anything, books, movies, whatever. I watch a lot of TNG episodes.
I mean, I'm going to be joining that particular crew.
Well, and now that you've watched the whole run, like, I always think about The Inner Light when I think about when I play Journey, because that's the one where Picard lives the whole life. He lives the life of a doomed society, which is exactly the story of Journey. You're like, you're reliving the life of a doomed society to kind of, you know, think about their history. You know,
I was talking about that episode to a coworker. We were at like an offsite video shoot, and I was like, how do I talk about this episode without getting emotional?
Yeah.
Because it's so good, and the way that they like revisit it later on in the series. Because I think at one point someone asks Picard, like, have you had kids? And he's like, oh, yes. Yeah.
Ugh, it's when he has his piano player girlfriend, and he tells her, like, by the way, I've lived an entire life.
Had a family that I loved, exactly. That I truly loved. Yeah.
So anyway, I mean, I think that's the sort of, that's the closest that I get where it's like, you know, stuff that I will watch or read or play for comfort. You know, I've been kind of itching to, like, I don't know, maybe it's time to play Chrono Trigger again. You know, like, there's a few things, like, you know. It's
just 100 more hours in Elden Ring.
I do want to talk a little bit about some specifics of the game this time around. I mentioned this a little bit at the top, but I do want to just, like, reiterate, like, how... Because the game is 10 years old now. When we first played this, it was on a PlayStation 3. And I think it's a testament to strong art style being able to carry something through. Because, like, obviously they, you know, they've done some cleanup passes and the resolution and frame rate and stuff like that. But, like, the core of the art style is really what makes a game look either modern or dated. And I think the game, because it's stylistic, really holds up a decade on. Whereas if you were to look at, I don't know, like Red Dead Redemption 1 or something like that, like obviously it still looks good for what it is, but it, you could tell that it came out 10 plus years ago. Whereas this is like, I could totally see this on Game Pass today, you know?
Yep.
And so I was really impressed by the restraint in the art style, and like they just use what they use so judiciously, where it's like, if they want you to see that big whale thing, the game is gonna very subtly angle you towards that big whale thing, you know, like in just a very elegant way. That was super impressive.
Well, and even on the sound, right? Like, I was listening to the sound a lot in this game. You know, because having played so long, you could try to break the game, right? Like, there are moments where I'll just try to jam myself in between rocks or whatever. in the sequences that force you down the hill. But the, you know, the sound the whales make.
Yes.
It's this sort of like low, beautiful whale sound that is really evocative. I mean, the sand and the sequence when you're, the sand is like golden, you know, when you're going at side scrolling, like what a, just, because the pacing is so good, right? Like, you're right about the art style. And in that scene, it's great because you become a silhouette, right? Like you become sort of a black figure. The same towards the end when you're floating in the sky and you're sort of fully clad in white. Like, they use these sort of primary, like light and dark areas really judiciously. And I think the pacing of the game to take you from these moments where, you know, sand is this trudge into sand as being this triumphant thing into underground where it feels safe and confining, having just been outside in this transcendent open space. Back into the winter where that same sort of look becomes snow and it's a wholly different experience. And it leans in on the theme of you moving slower and your cloak decaying more and your inability to fly as high. And it's just the pacing of that, I think, is so beautifully done. And it works so perfectly with its minimalistic art style, because it says so much with very, very little.
Did you meet anyone this year?
I did not. No one.
Man, it was it was such a... I was playing it, and Hannah's sitting there on the couch, like, doing her thing. And all of a sudden, I was like, there's someone! There's someone! Like, and someone had... I saw, like, from far away, I saw someone, like, you know, across the level. And it's just super exciting, you know? Like, I'm mashing the button to, like, try to call as loud as I can. And, like, and we notice each other. And I know this person...
It's probably like you.
Well, and then I had chosen to, I stuck with the orange cloak, but I've played the game so many times that the design on the cloak is almost my whole cloak, you know, because another. So it's like it's clear that I've played the game a lot, and the person that I found was wearing a white cloak, and so both of us had played the game a lot, you know, clearly to get that, and I could just tell like we were so happy to find each other because we found each other. I think we found each other in like the underground area after the. Sunken city.
I often wait there being like, maybe someone will come.
Yeah. And someone did. And like, we just spent like we spent 30 seconds just like dancing around each other, mashing the circle button to like chime at each other.
Yeah.
And then we ended up playing the whole game together. The rest of the game, it was the same person. It was only one. Cool.
Shout out to Dickhead 420.
shout out to PSN screen name Clarity of Sound for being a pretty sweet Journey player, because we just went through the whole thing and we could really, each of us could tell that the other had played the game a lot because we knew exactly where to go, where to stop, where to look at, you know, cool views, you know, all of that stuff, and just the communication system back and forth, like. We got into little patterns of communicating, you know, two chimes here, two chimes there, like, you know, repeating from each other or like, you know, playing off like one person takes a turn to like boost the other one's cape back. And then the other person takes the turn to do it. Like what they were able to do with multiplayer, it is just so influential when you look at where games are today, like even playing Elden Ring, you know, like it's that, I mean, we joke a lot about Strand games, but I mean, goddamn, like what a fucking Strand game this is.
What a Strand game. You know? Yeah, for sure.
It's wild how well they were able to connect players with one piece of communication input.
The idea too of 10 years after the game comes out.
Yeah.
Finding someone on his anniversary that you're playing with it. Because, you know, we're not the only ones, right? People play Journey every year at its anniversary as a thing.
Yeah.
I think it took that game company a long time to even sort of reflect that on their social media pages and, like, understand that people were doing this as a sort of ritualistic thing.
Yeah.
It's such a treat. And it's been, I think, a couple years since I found someone, but I distinctly remember the last time it happened, sort of hesitating and both of us really luxuriating in the presence of another player and bathing in that moment before you go through the lights.
Yeah.
You know, and there's that, it's such a fucking great game, but like there's that experience, right, where you know, okay, we've been here, but like, you know, I gotta go to bed at some point, like we gotta keep it moving, we're gonna go through the light and this is it, and we're not gonna know each other, we're not gonna talk to each other,
right,
we'll probably never play with each other ever again,
right,
but like we had our moments, but we also know that that's what we signed up for, and so you go through that light together, and man, like it's such an interesting place to be in when you are in it voluntarily in this way, right? It is different. It is very different, I think, than, you know, playing Elden Ring right now.
Yeah.
In the same way that, you know, when I play Bloodborne or when I play Dark Souls and I get invaded or something, I love it. I love it because it's years after the game came out.
Yeah.
And I know that this person and I love this game. You know, like the fact that I can put my summon sign down in Dark Souls 3 and get summoned within a few minutes to me is, it's this great thing because I am partaking in this like shared group. And again, going back to kind of like the communal aspects of participating in a religious practice as a kid, like those are kind of the interesting dynamics that I really valued, right? This feeling that you were connected to people you've never met before across time and space, and you can count on those people being in that same space for years, you know? Yep. And in a way, honestly, in a way, I wish I was playing Elden Ring for the first time 10 years after it already came out.
You know? Right.
Like, I want that. I'm excited for that experience. I am genuinely excited to revisit some of my favorite games years down the line because I know that the people that I encounter in those spaces, especially when they're Strand games, will have come to these experiences, you know, voluntarily and with that same level of appreciation. I mean, it's unlikely that the person that you met was someone that was like, oh, I'm going to pick this game up on sale, lol. Like, what's going on?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
What's like, this thing?
Yeah, and in the same way that I think when I replay Bloodborne or something, I don't think very, very few people are in there because there happened to be a weekend sale at this point, you know?
Yeah.
If you haven't played these games, you probably won't. I mean, right now it's different, I think. And my hope is that a lot of people will go from Elden Ring and revisit Bloodborne and Dark Souls and have a great time in those worlds as well. But there is something really special about sort of saving a gaming space for the group of people that see it as this safe harbor for which to, you know, revisit now and then.
Yeah. I mean, it's the, that's essentially the definition of a community. You know, it's like people who are mindfully partaking in something that, you know, they can all kind of agree upon.
Yeah.
Versus just like why, getting swept up in the zeitgeist.
It's kind of why I hate the Fortnite messages that I see in Elden Ring.
Right. Know? Right.
Like, who the fuck? Come on.
I mean, again, that's, you know, who knows what we would see if they had just implemented some sort of like chat feature or whatever. But it's like it's a game that Journey is a game that is simultaneously lets you really express yourself a lot, but does so in such a way that keeps the message pure. Like, there's no misinterpreting the message of the game because of how people, you know, kind of pervert the chat system or whatever. And so, like, it's just such a, it's so rare to find, and I don't think it's a mistake that, you know, some of the people that were behind the classic, like, you know, mechanics, dynamics, aesthetics framework built a game that so successfully balances all those things. Because like Journey is like a profoundly like mechanical game in many ways, where it's like the way that the game works is directly related to how it's supposed to make you feel and like what the moment to moment is supposed to do. But it's not a, you know, you're not writing your own story in the plot sense, but you are writing it in the behavior sense. And all of that is always, it's resonant, you know, like they're able to have all of that stuff and it doesn't necessarily conflict with one another. And it's just so rare that a game pulls that off, because as we all know, like no game story survives first contact with the player. And like Journey is one of those rare games where like it's just so robust in terms of like the message it's trying to create versus the amount of freedom that it actually does give you to kind of explore the world. Like it's just impressive, like from top to bottom.
Does it bum you out that, I mean, I haven't played Sky and maybe it's really great, but that game company hasn't really followed up with for 10 years with a game that, I don't know, it feels like carries through the legacy that it was Journey.
It is kind of interesting. I mean, this made me want to play Sky just to see where they went after this. And I think Sky is a more persistent, I think Sky is like, you know, is more of a live game in a way. Mm-hmm. Like, I think they have like regular updates. They have, you know, different, you know, kind of events that they put out. And so, maybe it's just a commentary on Journey came out at the right time and place. You know, the tech was there, the budding interest in games that were not just about Space Marines was there, but we hadn't quite made the jump to service games, you know?
Yeah. It also feels a little bit like Journey sort of accidentally became this, right? Because there's no way that they thought people would still be playing this game.
Yeah.
I mean, right. Metaphorically and literally religiously a decade later, you know? And it almost feels more like they uncovered something by happenstance, right? Like the idea that once we release the game, it's not ours anymore, I think is never more true than in something like Journey, where it really meant so much to so many people and it was a collective effort, right? So it's not like one person can say, I set out to make this game that was going to be a ritual for people every year, right? Like no one did that, right?
Yeah.
Their collective thought created something that was wholly unique and resonant and meaningful for years and years and years to come. And it's, I hope that they understand how lucky they were to be able to put something. I think they do, right? Like from everything that I've read about a lot of the folks participating in that game, I think you had mentioned you had read some interviews prior to this podcast that sounded like it was a challenge. But I think, you know, having seen Genova Chen talk at GDC and share some of the letters he's received from players of Journey, you know, people who've gone through some really hard stuff and for whom Journey was a really meaningful experience to them during those challenging times, I think that they feel just as blessed having been able to create something like this as those who find meaning in it every year.
I mean, I think the, you know, the legacy kind of from a human perspective, like Matt Nava, who was the artist on the game, you know, he went on to I think he founded that studio that did Abzu and The Pathless.
Yep.
And then
good one, good game.
I think you know, Austin Wintory is, you know, prolific in the video yes. game space yeah. now, you know, where it's like
including The Pathless. Yep.
Including The Pathless, but and I, you know, Kelly Santiago and like all of those folks, I think you know, that game company, while perhaps, you know, they're definitely, you know, that game company is a different company than it was, you know, kind of leadership wise and creatively when those games Flower and Journey and Flow were being made. But like any influential text or band or, you know, whatever, like it's now seeded this aesthetic throughout the medium. You know, these people are now kind of, you know, it's the splintering, you know, whether it's the splintering of a religion to other kind of related religions, or whether it's the splintering of, you know, an amazing band that then goes to, you know, create other music, or even something in the video game industry. Like we see things like Looking Glass Studios had like an outsized influence on the, you know, on the studio or on the industry for like the subsequent games. You know, you don't get BioShock without Thief, you know? And yeah. So I think that's a very similar thing. Like you don't get a lot of these types of, and especially in the indie space, you know, I really don't think you get a lot of the types of games that we like most without what these folks did. And, you know, even if it can't persist forever, even in the that game company space, the footprint of this game is pretty big for such a modest little game, you know?
Yeah. It's almost to the point where I'm bummed that we thought of the Orson Welles Award in Elegance so late in our gamies conversations, yeah. or, you know, gamies, right? Because, you know, I think Journey was one of the ones that to us stands out, but
yeah.
I think every year there are people that, inspired intentionally or not from games that are, you know, from Journey or other games like it,
yeah,
are able to tell really resonant stories yeah. while honing in on, you know, exactly what makes that experience great. Like,
yep.
you know, not to say, what's the game, Goa Goa or Goa Gora, mm-hmm. you know, like yeah. games like that are just aesthetically beautiful, yeah. elegant, charming,
yeah.
minimalistic, short, for crying out loud.
I mean, even something like Unpacking or whatever, like it's a totally yeah. different sort of game, but like I think Journey really helped carve the space, you know. It feels like I think we'd be surprised at how far the medium, especially in the mainstream, has come in terms of being willing to kind of take different aesthetic and thematic chances.
Yeah.
Now between 2022 and 2012, you know, I think it actually has made a difference, and I think a game like Journey probably has an outsized influence on yeah. some of that.
I mean, 10 years in the video game industry is forever.
That's true. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Very rewarding experience, especially this year. Kind of a good meditation in a time where it's well needed.
Yep.
Well, I guess we will we'll leave it there. As always, thanks so much for listening. experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is the website. You can also find us wherever you find podcasts, including the Journey Debrief from back in episode, like, I mean, 10 years has got to be what, like episode 100?
Literally hundreds of episodes ago.
Hundreds of episodes ago. You can still find that. I'm going to try to find it right now. Experience Points TV. I would love to hear what other games that people are play ritualistically.
Yeah. What are some of those decades long yeah. revisitings that people have had?
And then I guess we'll do this again in another 10 years, the 20 year anniversary.
It will be so, I mean, really, the thing that will dictate it is how long they can support the multiplayer. And even when you can't, I mean, I still think there's value to play it in isolation, so it'll be super fascinating to see how it evolves.
Do you think that they'll shut the servers down at some point? Oh, also, it's episode 164.
164. Okay, so many hundreds of episodes ago.
Well, funnily enough, almost 500 episodes ago.
Holy crap!
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't. I would hope that if it ever came, like if it's a money thing, Genova, hit me up. Like, I'm willing to crowdfund, yeah, you know, whatever infrastructure you need. It has to be a modest amount, right? Like, you're not running WoW, you know, like you're keeping it alive for some diehard. So like, I wonder what that will be. You know, what will dictate the end, or I guess really just the evolution of how, like, how this game changes next.
Yeah. Wild.
Cool. Well, as always, we appreciate everyone for listening, and we will be talking to you all next week.
Ciao. Every time.